Hi, I'm Allison Janney, and you're here with me on What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. And that's my sexy voice.
Boom.
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
Welcome to the show. I am Dan Dunn, and what we're drinking is El Tesoro Tequila, which simply is one of the best tequilas in the world. It's made by Carlos Camarena, who is a legend in the business at the La Alteña Distillery in the highlands of Jalisco, Mexico, and we're going to get into that in just a little bit. Now, normally, if your regular listeners know how this show works, I'm the host, and we book guests to come on the show, and they are interviewed by me, the host. And that's just what we did for this episode. But then I got to thinking about it, and I was like, you know, the two guests that we booked for this show, this episode right now, are so special, not only to me, but to the rest of you, I'm sure, that I felt like guest wasn't going to cut. They needed a loftier title. And so I have made a decision that I've not made before on this show. I'm promoting them simply from guests to guest co-hosts. Yeah, that's right. Guest co-hosts. Now that begs the question, if the three of us are the hosts, Dan, well then who's the guest? And to that I say, enough with the goddamn questions. This is my show, my rules. Don't mess with me when I'm drinking tequila. Tequila fires me up. And by the way, what I'm drinking with it right now is I've got a Paloma, which we know is grapefruit and tequila. I'm using the El Tesoro Blanco, and oh, yummy. Oh, yummy. Okay, so now that we got that squared away, let's bring on our guest co-host. First up is someone who we all know and love. He is a Emmy Award-winning writer, comedian, frequent guest on every show I've ever done in my life. He's been a frequent guest, and I'm happy for that. Mr. Tom Caltabiano. Tom, how are you?
Thank you, Dan. I'm doing exceptionally well, especially when I know what tequila we're about to drink.
It's good to see you, my friend. It's good to have you on. And our other guest co-host has won an Academy Award, a British Academy Film Award, 7 Primetime Emmy Awards, 7 Screen Actors Guild Awards. Among the myriad things she has going on in her career, she currently stars in the wildly popular CBS sitcom Mom. You know her, you love her. Please give a warm What We're Drinking welcome to Allison Janney. Allison. Yes, I'm clapping it up. Hi.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back here with you. It seems like it's been too long. It's been how many? I don't even remember how long ago we did this.
It was a lot of years ago. I used to do a show with my pal Zane Lamprey, and you were kind enough to guest on that show. It was many years. We were in, I believe, Studio City.
Yes, that's right.
And we had some cocktails that day, like we're going to do.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was tequila, too. I feel like it was tequila. I don't know why, but.
Well, it's funny. Tom had said originally for this one that you wanted to do vodka. So I was lining up vodka at first, and then apparently have you kicked the vodka? You're off the vodka? What's going on?
People, this is a New Year's resolution I'm trying, Dan. I just decided that vodka was the alcohol that was causing me the most problems.
Okay. So you got rid of vodka and makes perfect sense, and go to tequila.
I started thinking, you know, oh, that's the way to like just have vodka with no fruit juices or something, as like a skinny girl kind of drink. And then I like the sipping tequila part because I don't really like to, like martinis just go down so easily. And I like to just take my time with tequila, and I love it and I appreciate it. And it seems to be working out for me so far.
Well, that
I remember every day so far.
You're remembering every day. So that's why when Tom threw me that little curveball and said, you know, Allison wants to do tequila instead of vodka, I was like, okay, what am I going to do here? What tequila should I bring in? And especially, you know, Allison, I've mentioned you are a very decorated thespian. You've won so many awards. I don't even know how you keep count. But so I thought, well, if I gotta have an award winner like you, I gotta have an award winning tequila. And this is the thing about El Tesoro. There's a big, Tom's heard of this, the International Spirits Challenge. Over the last quarter century, it's a British based competition. It's one of the biggest judgings in the world. It's a blind tasting. As my friend Brad Jaffe, who's a frequent guest on this show, wrote about for Forbes, the most recent international spirits competition, El Tesoro cleaned up. They dominated the category. They netted a gold medal in every major category of the spirit, the Blanco, Reposado, Añejo, and Extra Añejo. That's never happened before. And so I thought, you know what? There's only one tequila we can do with you, and that's El Tesoro.
Do you know how many tequilas they were competing with in that?
Oh,
two. It was two.
Two of them.
Dan's homemade bathtub tequila, and
yeah, and it was hundreds in the category. I mean, that's always the way it is with these. I'm a judge in the San Francisco World Spirits Competition, and it's always that way. You know, everybody enters; they want to get that. You know, when you go to the store to buy something, you'll see that little thing hanging from the neck of the bottle, you know, gold medal or double gold. It's very valuable. People, that means a lot to brands if they get that kind of hardware.
How many do you get to judge? Like, what kind of liquors are your, I'm sorry if this is.
So how it happens is it's the same thing. San Francisco's blind as well. So we'll do a category and we're not given a lot of information. It'll be like, all right, this is a single malt scotch between 10 and 16 years. That's the category. And then we'll get, I'm trying to remember, it's been a couple weeks because I didn't do it last year because of COVID. But you'll get several, and there's four judges sitting around a table, and it's the top people in the world of it's like going to the Academy Awards of bartending. So it's James Beard winner, you know, Dale DeGroff, who Tom knows, and all of the top bar and restaurant pick people. And we taste it and we go, okay, what do you think? And you give it, you're like, silver, gold, this. And if there's a disagreement, we'll talk it out. And then we just decide on what it's going to get. And then the top ones at the end, you know, can win best in show, best in category. But it's not nearly as fun as it sounds. It's kind of exhausting because your palate gets blown out like pretty quickly.
You do to clear your palate in between the.
You take breaks and you drink. I just drink water, really. Yeah. I mean, you just know that by the end it's. You're just.
And do you spit like when you taste wine?
You couldn't make it. You have to spit. You'd be wasted.
By the way, Dan, just to be clear, I'm friends with Allison.
Yes.
She wanted to do this. She said, if I'm not drinking within 5 minutes of it starting, I walk. And so now it's non-drinking.
Do you have a cocktail? Do you have a cocktail going?
So Allison made margaritas for both of us. We also, Dan, just because...
Dutch wants one too.
Yeah.
Allison's dog is climbing on her as we're doing this. There we go. Yeah.
Okay. El Tesoro sent a spicy dipper. Okay. Spicy rim dip.
By the way, if you're at work, do not Google spicy rim dip. You'll be fired immediately from the results that come up.
Yeah. Do it in incognito mode. So we're going to try.
You can't see it. I can't see it.
Yeah, so what happens is you're getting this spice. They put it on a plate and then you take a lime and you rim the glass with the lime. Everybody at home that wants to do this. And then you just turn the glass upside down, spin it in that spicy rim. And then you've got, look at that.
Spicy.
Delicious.
Yeah.
So you pour
Allison,
through.
I'm assuming you used fresh squeezed lime for this, correct?
Oh. Dan, let me tell you, right outside, if it were daylight, you'd see I have a limon tree outside my house. So it's not, you know, it's a limon. They call it the tequila tree.
Okay.
And they are, if you've never had one, they taste completely different than a lemon or a lime. It's really a unique flavor and they're spectacular. I have this tree produces
She almost has to move. So Dan, I would say she topped you by you saying, oh, I hope you have a fresh, how about I grew it?
Dan, I grew it, picked it myself.
It's right outside the door.
All right, Dan.
Yes.
So this is made with Tesoro Blanco, El Tesoro Blanco.
Blanco. Okay. Cheers to that, guys. Here we go. You want me to tell you a little bit about the Blanco? I got my notes right here. It's unaged. Okay. So just so everybody knows, with a Blanco tequila, by law, it can spend up to 2 months in the barrel, but generally they never do. Blanco silver tequilas, they're just not aged at all. From 2 months to a year is a reposado or rested. Anything over a year is añejo. Over 3 years is extra añejo. So this is the Blanco El Tesoro. It is not aged at all. It's just beautiful, really fresh. You get some green olive on there, a little honey flavor. Alcohol percentage on this is 40% ABV, which is generally what you're going to get for tequila. Okay, especially for a Blanco tequila. And I think it's delicious. It's $45 a bottle. Can't beat it.
We should have probably tasted that before we had our yummy.
I know. Well, we have our little tequila glasses. I'm actually going to hold off on, I'm going to do the reposado for the neat tasting because that's how I roll. Now, guys, how are you doing with quarantine and all that? Get good now, right? We're drinking tequila.
I have to tell you, Dan, spent most of the quarantine pandemic time of 2020 in Ohio with taking care of my parents. And then, I was supposed to have started back at mom right now for after the Christmas break, but they've pushed us 2 weeks. So this is the first time I've actually had the time where I just was, you know, organizing my sock drawer or going through, you know, sorting clothes, Marie Kondoing my house. And I've kind of, I've made the best of it. I actually have not minded the solitude. I've welcomed it for me right now. What about you, Tom?
My story is
slightly different.
But I like that Allison's like, I've really enjoyed the solitude up until this discussion where I have to have Tom sitting next to me breaking my solitude. It's a lot of Zooms. It's a lot of Zooms. Luckily, we're in the business where the one thing that I would say that changed for Allison is on Mom. So I was a writer on Everyone's Raymond, live audience. Mom, live audience. So there's no more live audience. So that totally changes the timing of the delivery. You know, that's a real, you're now doing a movie.
So it's Laugh Track now, I guess, right?
Yeah, they do. I mean, there's basically the director and they allow one writer on the floor. So they laugh and the crew is allowed to laugh if you know, they find something funny, but it's different. It's a different energy. It's not, I miss the energy in the room and I miss our audiences and I'm really grateful that we still get to tell these stories even without the audience. And we have so much, the COVID protocols are extraordinary on the show. Or different zones and no one's allowed to, like, we so far, knock wood, we've been able to do it. And the latest numbers though have caused them to be alarmed
they said don't drink tequila in close quarters to anybody.
Exactly.
By the way, Dan, just as as the co-host, I'd be interested to hear for Allison, since she's one of the few who can cross over from a movie where you have no audience,
yes,
to the live audience, which you get the feedback, and that's what we're talking about. You get the timing. So you're on a regular show, you're rehearsing all week, and you've said the same joke all week. And then it just feels like, okay, here comes the same joke again. When the live audience comes in, it's completely new to them. And all of a sudden, the actors, bam, their timing comes from it. So
it very much does. And sometimes you think a joke should be my line, fast, then the laugh. But the audience laughs after his line. So I got to wait. I got to pause. You got to learn how to ride the wave of laughter from the audience, which I always think I brought a skill I brought with me to this show because I started in theater. So I knew that the business of holding for a laugh and knowing how long to hold. I am famous for my pauses. I love to let the audience laugh and let the laugh die down and then let them start up again before I start. Like, I love that relationship and playing that because they're a character in the show. Their energy, their laughs are part of it. So we don't have that anymore, but I think we're still doing it. a good job.
I'm sure, by the way, I'm sure the shows are great. It's just fascinating to hear from someone who's such a good actor to know that you feed the audience. The audience tells you, stop talking because we're going to laugh so hard that you're going to have to wait to deliver your next line. And that goes away.
Dan.
Oh, hold on. That was my pause. I don't know if you know, I'm very good. Yeah.
Dan, you've never been to a live show. Did you ever go see Raymond, or did you ever see?
Well, I mean, I wrote for a show. I wrote for Talk Soup, so we didn't have an audience. We just had.
I love Talk Soup. I had a knife that Joel McHale gave me, the largest hunting knife that is up in my bedroom, and I'm not sure how to open it. It makes me feel safe that it's there. But did you work with Joel?
No, I was before Joel. I was actually there. It was Aisha Tyler.
Okay, great.
Yeah, Aisha was there when we were doing. So Joel actually was the Soup, which was an iteration of Talk Soup. Like Talk Soup was Kinnear. Talk Soup started with Greg Kinnear.
That's right.
It was John Henson, Hal Spark, and then Aisha, and then they revamped it and made it the Soup, and that was Joel. But I know Joel as well. I've met Joel numerous times, but last time I saw him, he and I did a panel together for Doer's Whiskey. That somehow he and I ended up, somehow they paid us to come out and do this thing for Doers, and always a really, really great guy. Now, Allison, you mentioned your theater. So you started in college, and when I was researching, one of the interesting things was, I guess you met Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward in college, and they were very supportive of you?
Very. Paul was a graduate of Kenyon College, where I attended college. I also grew up in Ohio, and they built a beautiful new theater, and he came back to christen the theater by directing the first play in it, and I got myself cast in it. And Paul and Joanne were wonderful mentors for me, and always through my whole career. And Paul always said, if you ever need a favor, let me know. I'm there for you. Make it very specific, but I think you're talented, and I never asked him for that favor, but I loved having it in my pocket. You know, it gave me confidence knowing that Paul Newman said he would help me, but I never wanted to abuse it. But I just loved them. And Joanne, you know, got me into the Actors Studio in New York City, and she started theater companies in New York City with a bunch of us young actors who were trying to get agents. And she really paved the way for us to have the chance to have a career, especially for someone like me. There's so many times you get into the business through your father was a mother. You know, I didn't have anybody, and Joanne was that person for me. My connection she opened doors for me, Joanne and Paul. So I thanked her at the Oscars when I won my Oscar. I thanked Joanne because she made me believe that I could do it.
I watched over the holidays. I sort of got in this maudlin streak, so I started going back and watching some just old favorite movies, and one of the ones that I watched was Philadelphia. Not only because I love the movie, but that's where I'm from. And if you remember, Joanne Woodward played Tom Hanks's mother in Philadelphia. And it wasn't a big role, but she was so great. You know, she was so great and did so much in just that the little bit of screen time that she had in that movie. There was, you know, the scene at the end, and spoiler alert, in case you didn't see it, what's the time limit on this where you cannot spoil the movie? It's been out 30 years.
7 years, yeah.
So, spoiler alert, he dies in the end. And there's a very intense scene when they all come to see him after they've won the court case. Mm-hmm. And she just says, he's my sweet boy. And it's not the way, it's just every movement was so express, and I just bawling my eyes out, you know, when she did it, and just really amazing talent. But I've always heard just that Paul Newman was the most gracious, kind guy there was, and just really super down to earth as well.
He was, unless you interrupted him at a dinner.
yeah, I've heard that.
What happened?
Which I loved.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he was a private guy.
And people, I'm eating, yeah.
You'd be eating dinner. I remember eating with Joanne and Paul at a restaurant in Weston, Connecticut, where they lived somewhere around there. And someone came up and said, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. And Paul was like, well, you did just interrupt. And, you know, it was like he would keep very stern with people who would come up and interrupt his dinner. So I kind of loved that about him.
Did he, Allison, did he see your success on West Wing, at least? Like, did you ever get an acknowledgement from him? I mean, he must have been aware of it.
you know, it's so funny that it's just brought up a memory that I loved about Paul, because my friend Shannon wrote a movie and she knew of our connection. And she said, I want to get this movie to Paul because I think he'd really love it. I think this would be a really great movie for him. And I think this was in, I can't remember what year Paul passed, but this was 2001 or two that my friend wrote him this letter and sent him the script. And the response back was, Dear Shannon, I only have one more movie in me. This isn't it.
This isn't it. He died, I just looked it up. He died in 2008. September of 2008.
Okay, yes. So 2000, this must have been 2001 or two where my friend did that. And I just loved Paul's response because it was so lovely. Just like, I have one more movie in me and this isn't it. And it's so honest and blunt. And I think I just love him for that. But no, I didn't talk to him, but, you know, I'm sure he saw West Wing, but you know.
Yeah, but there was no, at least you had made it. I'm just saying,
yeah.
It's got to be for him where he goes, this young girl, I think, is talented. And then to see it, you know, that's always rewarding to see.
Wait, the beauty of doing a drinking show, though, is you can't mention that and not, we can't have a toast now. So I'm going to pour some, I'm going to pour some neat El Tesoro Reposado.
Joanna's still alive and I love her so much. And I saw her not too long ago, but let's drink a toast to Paul and to Joanne. Why not?
Let's go. Here we go. I just poured the El Tesoro Reposado for here. And here we go. We got that.
Allison, can you tell what color? I can't remember which one. Does that look like it?
This is the Reposado. The Añejo is the darker one, right?
The Reposado has a straw. It looks like straw.
Look like the same color.
Yeah, they look very. So here, I'm going to do this.
This is the one that was furthest away.
Here.
So how would you have done it?
I'm going to do this.
Okay.
But then you'll match it. You keep yours.
Okay.
So just match the color. Because that looks pretty identical.
That looks like the same color.
Yeah.
Cheers. To Paul and Joanne.
Boom. To Paul and Joanne. God bless them everywhere.
And just so you know, you mentioned the color on that tequila. One of Carlos Camarena's signature. I mean, when I talk about Carlos Camarena, the tequila maker, he's, put it in a context that you guys would get, he's Scorsese. You know, in the world of tequila makers, that's how like revered this guy is. Okay. And
one of the big for this, do you look for legs and stuff like that?
No. The only thing I would say is when you're nosing it, you know, you don't want to ram your nose in that glass. You want to kind of hover over it. Cause the it's not like wine. Wine, you can do that, but liquor will blow out your as they're both ramming their nose in there.
Dan, it's just the funniest thing. It's literally like, so do you look for legs? No. But when you're nosing it, don't stick your nose right. What's that? We're nose deep. You couldn't get your nose deeper in the glass.
You couldn't really do it. Yeah.
This alone, I think, would be give me an O, blow me an O point, or whatever the expression is.
So one of the things that one of his signatures is he doesn't overplay the oak. He uses seasoned oak. So you're gonna find his añejos, reposados are not as dark in color as a lot of the other ones you're gonna see. And he really wants to accentuate the agave flavor, which is that's why I love this tequila. If I'm gonna drink something, you know, Allison, here's the thing. When a distillate comes out, and I direct this to you because Tom knows has been on my show enough times, distillates come out, they're clear. They're always clear. Scotch, bourbon, they're clear. The color, unless you're talking about stuff where they're able to add color, but for the most part, where the color comes from in a dark spirit is the wood. You know, whiskey goes into a barrel. In the case of bourbon, it's a charred barrel, and then it starts to absorb all of the goodness from the wood, including the color from the wood. So the longer it's in there, the darker it's going to be. If I'm going to drink an aged spirit, I tend to prefer whiskey. So either scotch or bourbon, an Irish whiskey, or even rum too. With tequila, I'm not a huge fan of that's what I love this tequila. I love a little influence of the wood. Like this Reposado for me, I believe it spends about 9 or 10 months in the barrel. So it's just getting a little bit of that. But I really want the agave. I mean, how do you guys feel about that?
I do too. I think this is very drinkable. This just a nice, smooth, there's no burn or bite to it. It's very, I really like this a lot. It is a fresh.
I love this. I feel bad because I'm going to secretly take the bottle when I leave. And Alice is going to be like, Tom, did you see that bottle of, I forget which one it was. I'm like,
this may be my new, this might be my this might be the one. All I know is I love, and I've gotten many bottles of El Tesoro as presents, but I don't think I've had the Reposado. I think I've gotten the Añejo before. And then they also sent this lovely bottle to me as a gift.
Oh, the Paradiso.
The Paradiso.
Oh, yeah. So that's an extra Añejo.
How great is that? Should I, like, I mean,
5 years in the barrel.
5 years in the barrel as opposed to
Reposado. And that's in French oak ex-cognac barrels. Look at that thing.
The drum roll, Dan. Look at.
She's unwrapping it up. Oh, look at that thing. That's a good looking bottle.
Beautiful. It's got a
I don't want to burst your bubble on this vodka thing, switching to tequila, but you are aware 40% alcohol vodka, which is what most vodkas are.
Yeah.
And a 40% alcohol tequila is the same exact amount of alcohol. In other words, but you're saying if you drink tequila, you tend to go lighter on it.
I don't make a big drunken martini with tequila. And a friend of mine and I started drinking martinis and I never liked them. And all of a sudden I just love them. And one is never enough. And like the pillow. And
what kind of martini would you do? Would you do it with vermouth or you're just doing...
Oh, yeah. I like a teeny bit, like just the teeniest bit.
So maybe like 3-1 or 4-1 or something?
No. Not like, even. I mean, like just four, like the teeniest bit.
27-1.
27.
So like you're doing 3 ounces of vodka and then maybe like a tenth of an ounce of...
just the teeniest bit. I don't really want to taste it that. I just want a hint of it. I like it really cold with, you know, ice, what do they call it? Ducks on the, what's that expression?
Ducks on the pond,
like, cold with ice chips floating.
Sure.
And a twist of a lemon. And I just love them. And I just decided, you know, I just want to lay off the vodka for a while because I love to drink and I don't want to not drink. And I just thought I'm going to switch it up for a while. And so far it's been actually great because I'll have a little thing of tequila. And
do you want to taste that, Allison?
Yeah, I do.
I selfishly want to taste it.
Yeah, I want to taste it.
Oh, you're going to open the Paradiso right now. You guys are going for it. Is there something interfering with your happiness, preventing you from achieving your goals? Yeah, it's called a pandemic. I've been struggling with it. And at times I've kind of felt alone. And well, thanks to this sponsor, I know that I'm not. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with a licensed professional therapist. That's right. You need to talk to somebody. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. Now, this is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit BetterHelp.com/drinking. That's Better, H-E-L-P, BetterHelp. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. There's a special offer for my listeners. You're going to get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/drinking. If you need help, it's there for you.
I don't know. He's rushing me.
Now, while you're doing that, can I bring up something, Allison? Your first TV role was on a show that I got to figure I'm only one of a handful of people that was, I remember watching this show and loving this show. Morton and Hayes, right? Wasn't that the show?
Are you kidding? Stop it.
Yes. Morton and Hayes.
You didn't watch that. You did?
I swear I watched it because I've long been a big fan of Rob Reiner, you know, Spinal Tap. Is in my top 10 movies of all time. So when he did that show, and it was also like Christopher Guest was involved, Michael McKean was involved, Kevin Pollak was played one of the leads on that show. And I remember, I mean, it had to be with 30 years ago, right?
Oh my God, more than that.
I mean, I was a teenager, and I remember watching it because it stood out to me because they would have these segments.
The Honeymooners. It was the lost episodes of the Honeymooners, but it was the lost episodes what was the show called? Morton and Hayes.
Morton and Hayes.
So they find them in a vault somewhere.
But what was great about it was they weren't making fun of that. They were celebrating. They did it earnestly, right? The old clips.
They did them in black and white, which was, we weren't sure that most people would you know, people would be like, what the hell's wrong with the TV set? You know, what's the color? And it didn't go.
It didn't last long.
Yeah. It didn't last. How excited do you think I was, Dan, growing up, knowing I was a huge fan? Spinal Tap was one of my favorite movies. And I had to go audition for Christopher Guest and Rob Reiner. And I was terrified. And I got that part. And I remember I chose to do, I was like a debutante in one of the episodes coming out with Maria, what was her name? Oh God, I'm going to forget her name, but she was the actress who played my twin sister. And I was like 8 feet tall and she was 8 feet wide. It was that kind of joke.
Sure.
And we're coming out and whoever marries us gets millions and millions and millions of dollars. And I stood up at the top. They were like, ah, now introducing these ladies of society. And I got up at the top of the stairs and I'm like, this was my move. This was the move that, and Rob Reiner loved so much. He was like, he was just fascinated that I came up with that. And I thought, I'm in the Rob Reiner, Christopher Guest Club. And then the show didn't go. And then I remember following Christopher Guest and just wanting to be in everything he did. But after West Wing, he said I was too famous to be in his other stuff. And I always get mad at him because I'd see him at the Globes or something or some awards show. And I'd send a note through the crowds and I'd write, I want to be in one of your movies. Put me in one of your movies. And I'd watch the note go across the room of celebrities and land in his lap. And he'd see it and look up and find me and go like that. I was like, you fuck, I'm so mad at you. I've always wanted to be with Christopher Guest again and he won't have.
Well, what is that like for you? So you get this show, you get your first network is on CBS, your first show. And the thing goes away in six episodes. Are you thinking, okay, this is it, I'm done? Or do you just, next thing?
At the time, I think I was still entrenched in, I had moved out because of a boyfriend to LA. But I was still like, I'm okay. I'm a theater girl. I'm okay. I don't need television. I'll go back to New York and do theater. It was like, it didn't happen for me. It wasn't meant for me. It wasn't mine. So I went back and then got lured back out with, I was doing a movie and then got called to come in and audition for West Wing and then things happened. So.
See, I wish I could have had that attitude. I had, as Tom knows, one of my books got made into a pilot at Fox and I kind of had that attitude for most of the experience. And then there was this moment when I went, like you were talking about, you don't have I grew up poor in Philadelphia, right? And here I am, and we're doing this pilot, and I was like a rube, you know, like when they were making it. I remember the first day on the set, it was called Living Loaded, which was the name of my book. And I remember
Living Loaded.
And I remember like the day I thought the name up for that book. And here we are, there's signs and there's hundreds, the crew, it was for Fox. It was a big pilot. And Donald Sutherland was in it, you know, a bunch of people.
Really?
Yeah. And
can you see this? I want to see this.
No, I can't.
Don't have it?
I have it, but we're not watching it. We're never watching it.
I want to see it.
We're never watching it.
All right.
It would have been great. And there's, at another time, I'll tell you why it didn't go great. But I remember the moment that I started to go, okay, I can get used to this, was we were on set and it was maybe like an 8 day shoot. And I was having problems with my eyes. Like I started having, like I couldn't see. And now eventually I had to get glasses. And I was telling the showrunner and he says, oh yeah, well, hold on.
Problems with your eyes that happened like,
Suddenly.
No. I just mentioned that I was probably going to have to go see an eye doctor because I was having trouble seeing long distances. And that was it. I wasn't asking for help or anything. And like 20 minutes later, he comes back and goes, hey, I got you in with the top eye guy in LA. He's in Santa Monica. And we're at Downtown Center Studios, you know, that place. Yeah. We're down there. And he says, yeah. And I go, when? He goes, this afternoon. And I'm like, all right, well, how do I get there? And he's like, well, a PA will take you. And I go, okay, well, how do I, and I, you know, cause I'm a EP on this show creator. Yeah. And then I'm like, well, how do I get back? And he's like, what are you talking about, man? He's going to wait for you. And then the PA comes up and he's like, Mr. Dunn, I'm going to go get you some food. I'm like, no, I'll get it. And Tom's like, no, that's what he's here to do. So he's going to get me food. And then he's going to drive me there. And he's going to have to wait in the car for me until I'm done. And then I go to Tom, Tom was the showrunner. And I said, well, how much is it? How much is the doctor? He goes, don't worry about it. What do you mean, don't worry about it? He's like, it's taken care of. I go, by who? Because I couldn't. I'm like one of those guys. Like, I don't like, I want to know who's paying my bill. You know what I mean? And he goes, don't worry about it. So then we went and went. And next thing you know, the guy gives me a prescription. We're going to get. And that was the moment when I went, you know what? I guess I could get used to this. And I allowed myself to think. And also I was like, you know, the money was like unlike anything I'd ever experienced before in my life. Like if you create a network show and you're an EP on the show and they also bought my, they had to option the book and buy the rights to the book and everything else. So I started doing the math. I was like, what if this goes to series? Right. I was like, it's 22 episodes. I'm like 22 episodes. I was like, oh my God, like I'll be able to buy a house. Oh my God. And that was my biggest mistake right there, because then it was, then we actually made the pilot and I'm like, there's no fucking way they're picking this thing up.
So Dan, yes. tell Allison the end of the story, which is you're doing this podcast from a double wide trailer out in Vegas, because it didn't work out. You don't have a mansion.
Well, actually, Tom, how do I skip over this part of the story? It was how fucking cool Tom was. Tom and I, can I tell this, Tom, or is this no good?
Yeah, I just think, here's my 100%, I'm happy to tell. I wanted to tell a Ray story about a PA type of thing related to that. I'm just saying.
I'm going to taste this way.
Yeah, whenever Allison's here, I feel like, because I know this, because I've been friends with Ray since way before he was famous. And people, when I go, I'll do something with Ray. Wait, let's pause for this. What is your reaction?
Allison just took a big sip of the Paradiso.
Yeah.
I did.
Is it good?
That's a cognac-y thing. That is definitely a, that's very rich. And
you like it?
I personally love it.
I love it, but this is very much, I wasn't expecting it, but this is very much after a big meal, like a thing I would like to just, you know, it's after a meal.
You're in your cognac snifter in your leather chair.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but
let me tell the Ray story related to that, because but what I was going to say is when it's me with Allison, because let's face it, Allison and I are friends. We love hanging out. I live right by her. So I'm like, Allison, let's do this together. And to me internally, I'm like, but I want to hear your stories because I know Dan and Dan knows a lot of my stories. Related to what you just said about, for people listening who haven't been involved in show business, the first year of Everly's Raymond, Ray is such a humble guy. He comes from stand-up. He has zero money also. He's just struggling. And so the very end of the first season, which Raymond was not a hit at the first season, Ray, who had been doing laundry, we shared an apartment together. So we did laundry together. And then eventually he was so busy because he was an editor. Yeah. He takes his laundry to get done. And at one point he goes, is there any way that a PA could pick up my laundry? Okay. And the not the line producer, but a production coordinator gives Ray shit for having a PA pick up his laundry.
Oh my God.
So an executive producer who was a very strong-willed woman is in the writer's room. And Ray goes, yeah, I kind of got reprimanded for having the PA go to the end of the block where the dry cleaner was to get the thing, right? And she goes out of the blue, because, again, we're like Dan. We don't know the pecking order of whatever. Yeah. The executive woman goes, what did she say? What did the production coordinator say to you? Yeah, she gave me, I shouldn't be doing that. Ray, you're the star of the fucking show. If you want a PA to wipe your ass, he is wiping your ass. And she storms out of the room to reprimand this woman, going, you're giving the star shit for having, like, her head went, you know, whereas Ray was like Dan. Ray would be like, well, it's okay.
Why is this production assistant that would give him shit?
She ended up getting fired from the show. She got fired from the show, not because of that, for other reasons. But it was just funny because Allison, who I know is such a nice person, but they also don't want you. They don't want you going, oh, sorry, I had to run some errands, so I don't know my lines.
I don't know
they
my lines. Yeah. Life
good. Yeah. You're worth millions of dollars to the network. So they're like, please let not have Allison, even if she's willing to do it, pick up her laundry. Please, can we take something off the table for her? That's their mentality. So for Dan, surprisingly, they really valued him.
They thought I was worth something. Speaking of nice guys, so Allison, very quickly, what ended up happening was Tom and I were going to pitch this show. based on Living Loaded. We had come up with a whole thing, and I remember it was a Thursday. We were pitching FX the next day, okay? That's our first pitch. And we're meeting to go over the pitch at, what was that, Victor's Deli.
Oh, yeah, Victor's.
Victor's Deli.
And Dan, let me just stop for a second just to paint the picture. Every year in the fall, there's a bunch of shows that get pitched, and there's a window to pitch sitcoms to networks. So when Dan is saying we pitch a show, you usually go in with a writer and maybe the guy whose idea it was. So in this case, Dan writes a book. I sit there with him and we go, hey, this could be the story. Let's pitch. Okay, great. Everything is lined up. We're now going over the pitches the next day. We're going to have pitches the next day. We're going over them in a deli in Los Angeles.
Well, we hadn't gone over it yet. You were a little bit late, and we're going to go over this pitch, and we're, keep in mind, we're pitching FX, and this becomes important. That's our first pitch, FX. Meanwhile, the book hadn't come out yet. It was still in galleys. And so one of the things you do when it's in galleys is you hit up your celebrity friends, like I'll be hitting you up, Allison, for the next book, so that you did give me one for American Wino.
Right, I did.
Yeah, somebody wrote it for you, and we put it on the back of the book. But it's okay. That's what everybody does. So you actually are on the back. That's right. You're on the back of American Wino, my most recent book. So in this case, I reached out to my friend Rob McElhenney from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He created Sunny, stars in the show. And Rob and I had worked on, they had optioned my first book, Nobody Likes a Quitter. So I give him the book just to get a blurb for the book. That's all I'm thinking. While I'm waiting for Tom to show up at the deli, Rob calls me. So I go outside to take the call, and he said, hey, man, I just finished your book, and I fucking love it, and I just had this, like, dream last night that this is my next show, this book. And as we're having this conversation, Tom pulls up, and Tom's like, and I go, I'll meet you inside, right? So Tom goes in, and I said, okay. And so I explain what's happening that with Tom and I, and Rob says, well, you know, I don't want to be a dick, but this is when Sunny was the biggest show at FX. And he goes, I don't want to be a dick here, but I'm pretty sure you're going to, in fact, he goes, I can almost guarantee you that if we take it into FX, they're going to at least order a pilot. And he goes, but I don't want to screw you with Tom. And if you want to go in there and do, you know, I'm just letting you know that that's just the reality of it at this point. And I said, okay. And now I'm sweating. I'm getting so anxiety because I go in and Tom is in there with his friend Tony, and they've got all the notes spread out on the thing. And Tom's like, okay, ready? Here we go. And I go, hold on one second.
I'm going to be rich. I can't wait to sell the show. Boy, yeah. I need this money so badly. This is going to be great. My future is set. What, Dan, what was that phone call about, by the way? You seemed a little
and
nervous.
And to Tom's credit, when I explained what had gone on, you said simply, you're like, well, you have to do it. You know, and if the show gets picked up, you can give me a job on the writing staff. And I said, well, absolutely. If anybody will let me do that. So yeah, that's what we did. And he wasn't right. But I mean, he wasn't wrong. By Monday, they had already bought it. So I was like, yay.
What Dan is leaving out is they had a development deal at Fox. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they were over FX. So they were ready to buy stuff. So they're like, we want content. Mm-hmm. And Dan said to me, listen, I am not... I am having a little trouble paying my rent right now. If you, Tom, think you're going to sell it. And I said, Dan, the odds of us selling it are slim. They have a development deal. I would go with them. And yes, if I get the job, if you get the job and the show is on the air, great. And I just said, by the way, I called my agent and told him. And how do you think my agent reacted? Ballistic.
Yeah.
I remember Ballistic. That. You were saying your agent was saying what an asshole I was and... Blah, blah, blah.
No, I was saying that.
You were calling me the asshole.
No, but I anyway, the whole point is, though, in the big picture, you have all these shows. To get one on the air is astronomically hard. To have one stay on the air, right, like the Christopher Guest, is astronomically hard. The odds of being on a mom are so low.
No, I've been on plenty of moms. Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm sorry. It's the tequila talking. Allison, really? It's that point of the show. Jesus Christ.
Dan,
yes.
Now that we're into hour two of the podcast,
this is happening during pandemic, by the way. My shows used to be 45 minutes to an hour. And now, like, as this thing drags on, so the last week's episode was the guy from Faith No More. And we just start drinking. And I'm like, it's an hour and eight. We'll just keep going.
I feel very warm and comfortable inside.
Good. That's what the tequila is.
You're also in your house. By the way.
I'm also in my house. I turned off there was a flame going over there, but it also was making noise. I thought maybe Dan might, what is that sound in the background?
Yeah.
There's a fire.
By the way, Dan.
Yes.
This stuff is so tasty. I don't want to drink too much.
I'm not drinking that.
What's that?
Until after. I'm not drinking that until after. I want to taste the...
All right, well then, let's do this. Why don't we try a little thing here that I've put together.
Okay.
For Allison to do, and this will maybe distract us from... Actually, it won't. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to name some films, Allison, that you've appeared in. And okay. I want you to tell me the first thing that comes to mind. Okay? Right. Now, just so you know, if I don't agree with whatever it is that came to your mind... You have to do a shot of tequila. No, I'm kidding. Or you could. Okay, so just whatever comes to mind when I mention these films that you've been in.
By the way, Allison.
What is he looking?
Allison is quaffing. Allison is quaffing to look good for her answers.
Do you mean when I look off camera? I'm thinking. That's my thinking.
Right, he's a cross between Colin. What is his name?
Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell and the Elephant Man.
Yeah, that's me. People insult me all the time, Allison. It's okay.
All the time that you look like Colin Farrell, because I'm not sure if that's what I was thinking, but you definitely do.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. It's the Irish. Done. Dan, done.
Can you do an Irish accent?
For the love of sweet suffering Jesus. I was in Ireland right before this pandemic hit. I got back from Ireland 3 days before they locked us down here. And
where were you in Ireland? Why were you
I was in Dublin visiting distilleries, Irish whiskey distilleries.
I've been on the Isle of Man. That's.
Oh, yeah. I've not been there, but I'd like to go there. That's where they have that crazy race, right? Where they,
Yes, the car race. What's it called? But this is a stupid story, but it's actually funny because of the industry I'm in, the movie industry. I flew all the way to the Isle of Man to shoot the interior of a New York City apartment.
Because it was
cheaper. I'm not fucking kidding you. In a movie that ended up, no one saw it, and nor should they have, but but Sam Rockwell was in it, and I love Sam so much. It was the beginning of a long...
Oh, yeah, you did the movie The Way Back, right, with him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that film.
Sam has crossed my paths a lot in my career. I love him so much. But we shot that movie in, the Isle of Man.
Before we get to the questions, I will say this, Allison.
Yes.
You sent me a picture. I wrote you a joke for, I think, the Golden Globes or... Yeah. Is something, and there's a picture that you sent of you reading the joke to Sam out loud and laughing hysterically.
Oh, at the Golden Globes?
At the Golden Globes, I think, yeah.
Oh,
and it was so, and I was like, who's, you're like, I'm reading your joke to this, and you went out and killed with it too.
What joke was it?
I cannot remember.
Come on.
I know, it's terrible.
You have to remember.
Was it the horse walks into a bar? Bartender says,
no,
hey, why the
no,
long
it
face? Because that's one of Tom's old standbys.
Yeah, it wasn't one of your bars for to get you in good with moms. It was, all right, I keep going. But I remember, I was like, what a great photo, because you were laughing hysterically. Because I sent you over. You're like, hey, do you have any jokes for...
I always call, do you to use him like I use him? Because
no.
I...
He uses me.
I'm funnier than Tom. I'm funnier than Tom, so I would never call him for a joke. No, I'm kidding.
I always call him to help me zhuzh something up if I'm a presenter, and I'm like, Tom, help me make this sound better. What can I do, or help me get a joke together? Because they're always wanting anecdotes when you go on a talk show, and I feel like I never have any, and I was asking him to.
Actually, there's a picture, Dan, that I took of Allison. She's doing Kimmel, okay? And I'm helping her with Kimmel because I would help Ray a lot. And really, it's 6 minutes. And if you don't love doing, like, you know, Ray as a professional comedian would work for 2 months to do one Letterman appearance for 6 minutes.
My
you know
God.
What I mean? He would be,
oh,
okay, I'm going to do it. And then he would go out and go, wow, Ray really is natural and makes up stuff. So most people, like Allison, who's this insanely good actress, it's like, well, I got to go on and be spontaneously funny and sick. So I go to Kimmel, I'm helping her. She does an amazing job, comes off, and it's the best picture It's me in the mirror, and she comes around behind me. And it's just, it's just a sense of relief. Like, oh, I got that over with. That another 6 minute appearance under belt. Because I think when you're at home watching, you're like, I'd love to be on panel, and that's the name for it. I'd love to be on the couch and talking to Jimmy Kimmel or just telling my life story. And most people who do it are like, please let me get this over with. Right.
Oh, it's my God, it's terrifying. It's the most terrifying thing. I don't enjoy it. I don't think, and you say Ray doesn't enjoy it either. Does he?
No, he enjoys it, but it's work. As soon as he get like, even I saw an interview actually with Larry David where he said, as soon as someone asked me to do something for the next 2 months, I got to think about it and do it. And think it through. It's just like you said. You're like, I don't want to do any podcasts with tequila with Dan.
I was going to say, that's the beauty of this show. There's so little thought that goes into it. You don't have, we don't have to even worry about
it. I forgot. I told Tom, I said, what do we talk about? I can't remember. What do we,
how great does Allison's hair look?
It looks great. You look fantastic. I wish I were there. I wish I were there with you guys. Instead, I get to be here all alone all the fucking time.
Where are you?
I'm in Venice.
By the way, she just tested negative. I tested negative for COVID last week, and I haven't been around people. So
yeah, we're. Kind of,
I don't go around anybody. Yeah, but I'm alone a lot. Let me have more tequila.
Dan, before you start crying and fogging up the camera, do you want to ask Allison these things? Because I have two more. Allison has a vodka podcast. She promised.
We got to do the rum. I got the rum podcast coming up later. No, I want to. Let me go back to my original thing, Tom.
Yeah,
you're about to lose your spot as co-guest host if you keep up with these shenanigans. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I just know I'm seeing Allison's producer going. What is this? What? How much money have we raised for this telethon?
Let's wrap
how
this
much
up.
Money did we cure this illness? How long is this going to go on? By the way, Allison, that is the biggest thing of water I've ever seen. You've got to show it.
You guys are going to laugh because I've been trying to drink more water. And this is the
Jesus judgment. Christ.
It's 8 a.m. Ready to start drinking. And then it says, you got it. Keep drinking. Look how far. I didn't get very far today in my.
Do the words on the side, do they really pump you up, though? Keep drinking. No excuses. A little bit more. You made it. Your liver's exploded. Yeah, that's the last one at the end.
This is supposed to be how much water you're supposed to drink in a day.
No.
And today I didn't make it past 8 a.m. So I got to start making up for that.
Allison, before Tom rudely interrupted my prepared segment.
Yeah, he's gone now. Hurry up.
I'm going to say these movies that you were in and you just first thing. And they could, in some cases, they're going to be small roles, but whatever. Here we go.
Okay.
First one from 1997, Private Parts.
I love Howard. I love Howard.
Have you never been on? Have you been on Stern though? I don't think I've ever heard you. You'd be such a great guest.
No, I've never been on Howard Stern. I was terrified when I got that part, and I thought because I didn't really listen to Howard before that movie. I wasn't really a radio person, and then I met Howard and completely fell in love with him because he was just lovely. And Mary McCormick, one of my dearest friends, played Alice and his wife. And Howard just always took credit for my career after I'd been in that movie. He was like, well, Alice and Danny.
How come you've never done a show?
Because I'm not that's not nice. I'm not that, I'm not salacious or, you know.
You'd be such a good guest on that show. I mean, you've had such a storied career. I would love to have, because I think he's so brilliant at interviews, and I would love to have him really get into it with you.
I would do anything with him, because you're right. He is a good interviewer. He is very easy to talk to, much like you are, much like Tom is. I feel like Tom should be doing that kind of stuff, too. This is Dutch, by the way.
Hi, Dutch. That's the dog.
That's who bit Tom before this interview started.
Tom was clearly asking for it. My dog is over here right next to me. Her name is Boonahabin. My dog is named after a scotch.
Boonahabin? I've never heard of that scotch.
Boonahabin is on Islay. Islay is an island off the west coast of Scotland where the most peaty... Do you like scotch at all? Like, you know, the peaty scotches? So Lagavulin, Lafroig, Bamore, all the peaty scotches. It's a beautiful, absolutely gorgeous place. And if you ever go there, in fact, let's make a plan now. When we get out of COVID, me, you, and Tom, and we'll bring a crew, we'll go to Scotland. It is the absolute best place to go visit. It's such a beautiful country. And for the distilleries... But what's great about Isla is right next to Isla is a little island called Jura, J-U-R-A. And on Jura is where George Orwell wrote 1984.
Really?
And you can hike up to the cabin where he wrote it. And it's not like a bit, you know, it's this old stone, the most ascetic living you could imagine on this. It's a very craggy rocks island, very inhospitable place is where Orwell wrote 1984. And when you go there, you think, yeah, no, I get it. I get how he wrote that fucking book right here.
I've been on that. I love Scotland. I've only been to Edinburgh, but I loved it. It was the biggest small town city feel. You know what I mean? Biggest city, but small town feel.
It's gorgeous. And I've always said, I think they have a minister of charm in Scotland who just goes around and goes, we need more blackface sheep over here. And these rolling hills. And Edinburgh is Edinburgh is one of the greatest cities in the world, honestly.
Yeah,
but
really
places like Glasgow, like being a Philly guy, Glasgow speaks to me because Glasgow reminds me so much of, it's a very tough, hard scrabble town. And then when you get up into the Highlands of Scotland, it's stunningly beautiful. And, you know, Inverness and places like that, and the Isle of Skye, which is way up in the west. I love it so much. And I can't, you know, one of the things, Allison, and I'm curious to hear your take on this, that I am taking away from what's happened in the last year is, prior to this, I kind of got to the point where I was like, well, I'm tired, man. I don't want to go. Like, I get invited on all these trips. And do you want to come to Barbados to the distillery? And I'm like, no, just send me a bottle, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Never doing that again. When I get out of this, I'm going for it again.
I feel similarly. I definitely, I feel like I've been an armchair tourist. Like, I've not really had wanderlust, but I feel, because of this, I'm ready to, like, my father, who's still with us, he wants to take a trip down the Danube. I don't know if you go up or down the Danube, or you always just say you go down the
Blue Danube.
Down the Blue. I don't know. He wants to. I've never been to Vienna. I've been to Budapest, but I've never been to Vienna. I'd love to go up to Scotland with you guys. I'm in for that trip.
Folks, I've never admitted this on the show before, but I'm a guy. Yeah, it's true. And as a guy, I'm here to tell you that so much of our identity is wrapped up in our hair. That's why when we get into our 20s and 30s and start noticing the first signs of hair loss, it definitely feels like panic time. Thankfully, now there's Keeps, the simple and easy way to keep your hair. Treatments start at just $10 per month. Plus, for a limited time, you can get your first month free. That's right, free. Go to keeps.com/drinking to receive your first month of treatment for free. Take care of your hair, and your hair will take care of you. By the way, my ADD is not going to allow me to not do this segment that I've prepared, so we have to do it. No, we have to do it. Private Parts, Howard Stern, you love that. Okay, next one, American Beauty.
Sam Mendes is the thing I love the most about American Beauty, the director.
Wait, wasn't American Beauty Alan Ball?
He wrote it.
Sam Mendes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Yeah, okay.
Alan Ball, I had done a play of his in New York called Five Women Wearing the Same Dress, and he got me in that movie. And I love Alan Ball for that. My experience with Sam Mendes was, I just fell in love with him as a director, and I got to work with him again on a little movie called Away We Go.
So that was a good one for you. That movie speaks to me because my mom's bipolar. But I just thought you did such a phenomenal job of portraying this woman that was so shattered.
I decided she was just on the wrong medication. You know, she was just on the wrong medications. And there were so many of my scenes that got cut out of that movie, which made me so sad because I loved the work that I got to do and the work that I did with Sam. And but it was a different ending. It would have made the movie have a different ending. And so they cut out parts the movie is perfect the way it is. The way they did it is perfect. But there's lots of stuff you've got. Oh, they cut that scene. And so
it's a great film. When I was going down my nostalgic path over the holidays, I almost rewatched the movie, but I couldn't because of the Spacey thing, because I love Kevin Spacey so much as an actor, and I thought it was going to make me sad to watch that movie and to go, what the fuck, man? Jesus Christ.
People have asked me if they think that it's such a cancel culture we live in right now, and people ask me, do you think people should watch American Beauty? I'm not going to make that decision for you.
I'm not making a stand about not watching it. I just think it would bum me out to know that this guy...
No.
And don't crucify me, anybody hearing this, that this guy isn't working anymore, because whatever the fuck happened with him, I loved watching him in movies. That's all I'm saying. Okay, now we'll move on before we get in more trouble. A little movie called I, Tonya. What comes to mind when I say I, Tonya?
Stephen Rogers. Stephen Rogers, who wrote I, Tonya, and we went to the Neighborhood Playhouse together back in 1982 to 1984. And, you know, Stephen wanted to be an actor like I did. And we went off on our paths, and we were always friends throughout our whole careers. And his took different paths, and he became a writer. And he wrote that part for me. And I remember him calling me to tell me. And he knew that I was a figure skater and that I'd be interested in the story and that I knew about Tonya. And I had no idea that I was going to... that it was going to culminate in me winning an Oscar. Are you kidding me? I had no fucking idea. I didn't even think I was going to be able to do the movie, but I was so flattered that Stephen, but flattered in a way that was like, he called me and said, I'm writing you a part. You're going to be an older lady with a bad haircut, and you wear a fur coat, and you're going to have a bird on your shoulder. I was like, all right, bring it. Whatever. It sounds like up my alley, because Stephen knows me and knows I can, the more bizarre and out there a character is, the more I can inhabit it and fucking take it on. And like, I don't care how fucked up the person is or crazy or what they wear. I will just get excited about characters like that. And he wrote that for me, but never in a million years did I think that was going to happen. So that was an extraordinary thing.
Is there a moment when you're doing something like that, though, that it ever crossed? I know you said not a million, but while you're doing it, do you think this is something like I've got my hands on something right now that is special?
I knew that the direct delivery to the camera, they chopped it up throughout the movie, but that section that I got to do, that a monologue basically to the camera, I loved doing that so much. I've never had that opportunity to be a character just talking about the story from my point of view and telling my story directly into camera was a lot of fun. And working with that bird that I met the same day I had to do it was hysterical, because this bird, I came up with the idea of me having a cannula and emphysema because the bird people were like, you can't smoke in front of that bird. I smoked in every single scene in that movie, and I couldn't smoke in that scene with the bird. And I said, Maker, do you have one of those oxygen tank things, to the prop guys? And they were like, yeah, I think I do. And literally it happened within like 5 minutes. Like there was no time to, and they brought it in and I had that and the drink and the bird just hopping wherever. And it was so much fun to have that element of surprise in my in the moment with me. It was a lot of there were a lot of outtakes. I want to actually see those. I don't know if I'll ever see those, but they'd be a lot of fun because.
Who is more difficult to work with, Chris Cooper or the bird?
Definitely the bird. The bird was something to.
But Chris Cooper pooped on you twice.
He did, yeah. And I had to admit that was not
pleasant.
Ah, my goodness. Here, this is my favorite part of the show, once we get to that first hour. All right, This is another one. We're going back here. 10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh, Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger. I mean, and my friend directed that movie, Gil Younger.
Oh, Gil. Oh, my God. Gil was hysterical. I've never met a faster director talker in my life. He was just like... it was just an assault of things. Like every time I was directed by him, it was so much fun because he was like, okay, do this now. I was like, okay, it was just like speed fire acting. And I think I'm in it with him at the end. He had some B-roll of stuff off camera in the credits after the credits roll.
I got to check that out. Yeah.
I don't check it out because I think we're hugging each other, walking out. I love Gil. That was one of my first parts that I got a paycheck that I could buy something more than a beret with, you know, it was like, oh my God, I could buy a coat with the, you know.
He was one of the first legit directors I ever met. And it was early 2000s. I think it was a script that I'd written. It wasn't based on any book or anything that I'd written, but it was a script that I wrote. And I remember meeting him at the Chateau Marmont. You know, I hadn't been here that long. And it was and Gil was fantastic. He was great. But I remember just being there, and it's that you're kind of going like, yeah, all right, man, this guy just did a big movie. Cause I think 10 Things I Hate About You was probably 1999. This was a couple years after that. And I'm like, yeah, man, this is Hollywood. But Gil was like exactly right. But also a very genuine, nice guy. But he was, you know, he a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of energy.
So enthusiastic, so much energy. It was I had a lot of fun. It was a very memorable part for me because
when you do a movie like that, do you look at a guy like Heath Ledger and you know, you see it, you're like, this guy's got it. This guy's got the talent.
Well, he's definitely, my scenes with him I only had a few, but I just loved his energy. He had a kind of nice, really nice energy, or nice grounded energy about him that I liked. He was so handsome but he wasn't an asshole, you know, he was just a really cool guy. And just, it was a lot of fun. I loved working with him for the brief amount of time that I got to, and it was very sad when he left us, but
I think this is one of these. We got to raise another toast here.
Yeah,
did one of Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger, cheers.
Cheers. Okay, we got a couple more here. The Help. All right, next one. I'm sorry, I did that on purpose. Okay, Finding Nemo.
No.
It just worked out that it was
just worked out, yeah. That was a bit we just did. I love The Help. Tate Taylor is a dear friend of mine, and that story is remarkable. Everything about how that came to be and how I got to be in it with Octavia Spencer, who's one of my dearest friends, who I've been with through the beginning of her career and watched her. I mean, Octavia used to come over to my house and watch me get ready for the Emmys. And so like she hadn't, her career had not taken off at any point, but she still remains one of my favorite people on the planet. And that movie, what it did for her was pretty extraordinary. And it was so great to see her get up there and win that Oscar for that. And for Tate Taylor and Octavia Spencer drove from Mississippi all the way across to California to be actors together in a beat up Nissan or something. Like they were just kids trying to be actors, and they drove across, and then he ended up directing her in a movie where she won an Oscar, and I got to be, there were some great stories behind that movie. I was so happy to be part of it.
Amazing. And the last one, okay. American Wino.
What?
Gee, that's your book, Dan. I don't think that's been made yet.
Oh, Tom, you didn't tell Allison we were about to pitch this? Okay, here we go. We're in a vineyard. No, kidding.
All right, let's do it, Dan.
That's my book. I don't write
There's no female characters.
Why don't you write female characters? It's all dudes. What do you got against female characters, Dan?
There's no... Are there female characters? I thought I was joking, but I'm like, are there? It's about my brother died. Tom knows this. My brother died. Hold on.
Okay, wait.
Hold on. Only because Allison's dog is literally.
He's growling at Tom.
And you don't want. So the dog. Tom, so let me paint the picture. I'm sitting in a chair. The dog is against me, sleeping in his chair, which is also my chair. And so while you were talking about your brother who passed away, the dog who already bit me once tonight started growling. That's why.
Bite. It's not, he was herding. My dog's a herding dog. He's a cattle dog. And he tried to herd.
Yes.
Make sure.
Now I'm herding.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, all right. Now Tom is herding. No. We're not going to. No, American Wino is a book I wrote about my brother drowned, jumped off the Venice pier, and he drowned.
He jumped off where?
The Venice pier on 4th of July.
Messing around, screwing around, and he got caught in a riptide and he died. And so a couple of years went by, and I hadn't properly dealt with the grief, and I decided I had a book deal at HarperCollins, and I decided I was going to. I didn't really care about the book. I just need to get the fuck out of here, right? So I pitched my editor on this idea that I'm going to drive around the country ostensibly to become the leading expert on American wine, but really it was to fix myself. And what I love about these stories is Tom always plays a role in these stories, because when I pitched my editor, she said, well, it's great, but there needs to be some stakes. And so I thought about it for a couple of days. I said, what about this? At the end of my journey, I'm going to do a seminar at a very shishi wine festival as the leading wine expert in America. And if I fail, it'll be a miserable failure. And she said, I love it. What's the festival? And I just Pebble Beach Food and Wine. And she said, great. Are they on board? And I said, yes, of course they are. Never asked them. Right. And, but when I did the seminar, Tom did it with me. I asked Tom to come up and do it with me, because I didn't want to do it by myself, because Tom, people were crying, and it was, and I said, and I needed Tom just for all the many things that Tom brings to the table. And I said, would you come with me to Pebble Beach and do this? And we put together this whole video package, and it was an hour long thing. It was completely sold out. People went nuts. It was great. Tom killed it and probably kept me from becoming a mess while I was up there doing it. So yeah, the book is about that.
Driving the country with your brother's ashes.
Driving my brother's ashes with me, and my brother's a character in the book, and we talk a lot in the book. But yeah, there's not a lot of.
What did you do with his ashes, though? What did you?
I had his ashes in a mason jar, and I brought them with me. And Allison, I had no idea what the book was going to be when I got back. I think I'd pitched it to HarperCollins as basically kind of a straight wine book, like I'm going to write this. And then I got back and I was massively depressed, and I just didn't know it, And I sat down when I got back. It was Christmas. I was gone for 4 months, and I got back Christmas of 2014. And then in the beginning of January, I sat down and it all came out. I wrote the whole fucking thing, 100,000 words in 4 months, but it ended up being a memoir about me and my brother and our childhood. So when I mention, and I'll get you a copy, but hold on, let me just have more tequila now. Tom, take over as guest co-host, because now I don't know.
Well, I was going to say, there's two stories in this that are amazing. One, the day that Dan's brother died, I was at Ray's house. It's 4th of July. The surf is so incredibly high, and we're noticing it. There was a storm from like New Zealand. And I'm like, how is there?
Yeah, the beach, they closed the beaches that day. Yeah,
this is 2013.
2010. No, he died in 2010.
But here's Allison. Allison, you want to hear a weird small world?
Okay.
The guy who's with us at Ray's house, the day that we're going, Ray's like, let's go in the ocean. Yeah. I go, man, the surf is crazy. Yeah. 4th of July day. The guy that we're with, who Dan put us together with, who's making the barbecue, had previously jumped off the same pier in like a, challenge.
What Tom left out of that story, Allison, is I was a partner at a barbecue restaurant. You know what? Let's not talk about that, because I don't want him to hear this and think that I'm somehow making him complicit in what happened. But yeah. Yeah, but
Dan, you got to tell the best coincidence of it. I'm just saying, I remember that day there were crazy waves and rain. And then that night I heard a guy died, and I was like, oh, who died? This is terrible. I heard on the radio that somebody died. Not having for a clue.
And it was my brother.
Dan's brother, who I had dinner with Dan a week before. And so
he
was 20, Dan, 28.
He was 31. Here you go, Allison. There it is.
Oh yeah, I have a signed copy, Dan. It's on eBay if you want to find it. but Dan, tell Allison the other story about.
Well, there's a couple. Another thing, and I write about this in the book that actually happened. And I don't want to drag this out too much longer. But what ended up happening, the craziest thing that happened to me that made me think when there's that kind of a traumatic event, was after my brother died, everybody was coming over all the time and they're bringing food and no one's leaving you alone, which is great. You know, it's, you need it, you know? And I don't know, it was a few weeks after he died and I went out and had some wine with some friends in the afternoon and I came back. And at that time I was it's the really twisted part, Allison, is I was living on the beach in Marina Del Rey and my deck had a view of the Venice pier. So I got to look at it every day. So I went up there though, and I put my headphones on and I was having a glass of wine and I had a nice little buzz going and the sun's going down and it's beautiful. And I was listening to the song Never Going Back Again by Fleetwood Mac. You know, the song, the beautiful guitar with Lindsey Buckingham. And as I'm listening to the song, my brother is there. He's in front of me, sitting on this chair opposite of me. As clear as I see you right now, I see him. And so it's like I'm rubbing my eyes, like this is not happening. But he's there and he's smiling at me. And I was just in that moment and it was insane. And then the song ended and he got up and he walked through the door and he disappeared. And that was it, right? So I thought. A couple weeks later, I was part of this thing called 826 LA, which was a literacy program for kids that was started by Dave Eggers, who wrote the book, Heartbreaking Work of Staggering Genius. And Judd Apatow was big involved, a lot of people big involved. And there was a fundraiser at the Writers Guild Theater. And I arranged for all the wine for that event. And I went with my friend Jonathan Goldsmith, who is the most interesting man in the world. You remember the commercials? And I went with him and his wife. And so we go to this thing, and it's a great lineup of talent. It was comedians and musicians, Randy Newman, Aziz Ansari, Fiona Apple, a whole bunch, and Apatow hosted it. And we get to the end, Randy Newman, who was it? I forget who it was, the end, but it was over. And then Apatow says, hold on, I have a special surprise before we end the show. He said, today I was out and my next door neighbor was out cleaning his car and we started talking and I told him what we were doing and he said, oh, please let me be part of this. I just want to be part of it. And I said, of course you can be part of it. And he said, so ladies and gentlemen, from Fleetwood Mac, Lindsey Buckingham.
Oh, get out.
And Lindsey Buckingham walked out. You can Google it. It's on YouTube. And Lindsey Buckingham walked out on stage and he played Never Going Back Again. And I was like, I'm getting teary eyed now. And I never felt anything like that in my life. I went, this is not an accident. I'm very pragmatic. And I went, this is holy crap. This is my brother saying, hey, man, you know. So there you go.
I wish you're lucky to have an experience like that, Dan. You really are. That's amazing that you had that.
Lindsey Buckingham took Allison's virginity. I think this is a real full circle. It's priceless.
Thank you, Tom. This is why I brought Tom to Pebble Beach, to bring me back from the edge of maudlin.
Yeah. Well, you need a little bit of light comedy. By the way, now that we're in hour three, how much have we raised on the board? Do we know?
And by the way, I'm happy to announce we've raised enough money. Polio is gone.
Polio, yes. Gone. COVID, cured.
We've done it.
Cancer,
we've done
over.
It. COVID is over.
Is he gone or is he still?
He's out. He's out by the time. Well, not
we
quite.
We could be talking long enough. He's probably gone. Dan, I don't want to, only because yes. I'm respectful to Allison's time and also.
No, we're leaving.
She's punching me under done. The table also. Which
going,
is
God damn it, stop it.
My hands are above the table.
I'm gonna say this, Allison. How much fun is it when we do hang out? Because having any social contact is so rare. And what Dan's long-winded story about Scotland and turning it down in Barbados, I get it.
It makes me want to travel now. I do. I'm
Are you Scottish, by the way?
I have some in me.
Are you Irish and I can't even do the joke. I was gonna go, are you Irish and Italian? Do you have any of that in you?
What's up? So, you know.
Listen, I just did a whole 23 and I did a whole who do you think you are thing where I did a deep dive into my DNA and my ancestors.
100% Italian.
It was un-fucking-believable. And you will see when it airs. I'm not
You're
allowed
Italian?
To talk about it. I can't talk about it now or I will be shot.
That was a joke. By the way, does this look like I'm sitting next to an Italian? No.
Well, this is not how I usually look. This is like...
I would say if I were to guess your ethnic heritage, I would say Scandinavian. Norway, or, you know, you've got the high cheekbones, you've got that.
I don't know what it means in Ireland or Philadelphia, but this means you're way off. So when Alice Janney gives you the left, right, no, take it, run with it.
It's, you know, it's mostly Protestant, you know, just English, Scottish, Dutch, French, English, mostly English. I do have an interesting story, though. If this one ancestor of mine hadn't survived like 8 catastrophic events in his lifetime, I would not be here. It's kind of extraordinary. When you get to
what
see
what year?
It,
what year are we talking, just roughly?
Mayflower was what?
1626.
1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
Why do I always forget these dates? Why don't I retain anything?
I don't know.
Is it the tequila?
What are you talking about? You memorize scripts.
Wait, you guys, I just asked you, when is the Mayflower?
What did you say?
I said, what did you say? When did the Mayflower
come over here? I said Wednesday, and I know that's wrong.
No.
1492.
No!
Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
Forget it. Let's just get off that.
I know slavery was 1619, because wasn't that the podcast? The New York Times? I listened to that podcast,
I don't know.
Wasn't it?
So then it was 1620.
Why do I consistently am terrible at dates?
But
I wish I had like that mind.
Have you seen her,
remember.
By the way? Have you spent time with Mary Lou?
I have. I like her so much. She's so incredible. It's so infuriating, though, to have someone remember everything. I
don't
remember nothing.
By the way, when people have a breakdown, who've won Oscars, it's much more dramatic than
right
other
now.
People. Yeah,
it's happening. Well,
Mary Lou Henner has a photographic memory of everything. If you ask her,
Dan, you should interview her. It's extraordinary, this woman's mind.
Yeah, at least she would know when the Pilgrims came over.
Yeah, why don't you two know when the Mayflower?
What are we? He's from Philly. He doesn't even know. He can't count past the 11.
I don't even know what the Mayflower is.
Oh, damn! Stop it.
It's a hotel.
I'm joking.
Man. It's a moving company.
I'm so All embarrassed right. and ashamed of myself.
Just so you know, Allison's agent, lawyer, and manager will be editing this. So none of this.
We're sending the audio files over
none
there.
None of this.
You're going to be editing this and make me look great.
I will make you. I can't make you sound great. You're already great.
We didn't try the añejo yet.
Hey, don't yell at me because Tom's not filling your glass with añejo. I'm trying to keep this thing. The ship righted.
You're gonna edit this though, right, Dan?
No.
So it's mostly audio.
You're not gonna edit it? Oh shit. Okay.
No, I'm gonna edit it. Of course. It will be edited. Might not be by me, but some professional person will edit this thing.
I wish you were here with us so we could eat dinner after this and be silly, because I mean, not that we're not being silly now.
Nobody wishes they were here there with you more than me, because know what happens when I get off here?
What happens?
Loneliness, yeah. Sadness.
You're in Venice?
We can't make it.
It's just me and my Pornhub premium account.
Do you know how good that is to do a spit take
I
with that
spit it
expense
out.
Of a tequila?
I swallowed.
You can't do
I
a spit take
sure.
with El Tesoro. That's like blasphemy.
I didn't spit it out.
Do you like this one or no? Because I'm going to tell you my favorite of the evening. Can I tell you the favorite of the evening?
Okay, what's your favorite? Go ahead. Let me hear it.
I like Allison better than Dan.
Oh, gee. Come on, Tom. Again, I'm a fan of Blanco and silver tequilas. That's
me
my
too.
Thing. That's my jam.
I'm with you, Dan.
The Reposado. This
Reposado. You said. Oh, you did say it right.
I said it correctly. Yeah.
you said
it. Yeah.
You said Reposado.
What is it?
Reposado.
You said Reposado.
Oh, I need a rest, which is a respite. So I this.
Oh
Dan,
my God.
This they should put this in a bottle and sell it. Because this is phenomenal. Why don't they
These
think of that?
People need to sell this.
Yeah.
I don't even know. It's crazy. This has been a fantastic 17 hours of podcast that we've done here.
Are we podcasting? This isn't podcasting. This is...
Yes.
You know, it's podcasting, yeah. There will be visual clips and highlights, but for the most part, it's the podcast. It's the biggest drinks podcast in the world, Allison. I don't know if you realize how lucky you are to be on the biggest... Your guest co-host How many Academy Award winners have to be on this show before I get some respect, Tom?
12.
Hold on, I'm going to just drink some more tequila.
I'm feel humbled. I wish we were in the same room, and I don't care who's been on before, who's going to after. I just think you're fantastic, and this has been a lot of fun talking to you. And I would like to continue drinking with you in person.
We're going to end the show, and then we'll have one more drink on Zoom. Tom, where do people find you? Tom Caltabiano, where do people find you on the social medias?
It's Tom Caltabiano Photo. Everybody Loves Raymond 360. I'm doing other things which aren't necessarily go hand in hand with drinking. So that's it. Just Tom Caltabiano Photo. And you'll find a lot of pictures of Miss Allison Janney on my photos because I always have a camera.
Tom takes the best photos ever. I have my most favorite pictures of me with my father and my mother. Tom has taken. He is amazing. And the only one that rivals him is my uncle Michael Putnam.
Because you're related to him.
I know, but you met him at my star ceremony. So, when he was taking pictures with a Leica or something.
So Allison Janney has an uncle who's an old school photographer. So if you step back in time and took a snapshot from 1950, her uncle would be there with an old Leica camera. So when Allison got her star on the Walk of Fame, she said, Tom, I want you to be a photographer of that. And I said, well, I'm never without my camera. She said, no, I want you to get paid. I want you to go through Warner Brothers and be in the pit with the other photographers, which I was.
Yeah.
Which, Dan, I'm going to send you an unsigned photo of that, of Allison looking spectacular, getting her star on the Walk of Fame, because everybody's there. Your West Wing pals are there. Chuck Lorre is there. Mm-hmm. Everybody's there because I have to say, Dan, don't record this. Of all the actresses I've met a ton. You are the first time I met you, it was my manager said, hey, can you have dinner with Allison Janney and me and whatever? And I said, sure. Who's Allison Janney? And he's like, she's on West Wing. She's won a bunch of Emmys. I'm like, sure, I'll go to dinner. Every actress usually is so narcissistic and so I feel bad, like, casting aspersions on all of actors, but I'm sitting here going, wow, this actress is very, she's listening to stories and she's listening to other people's stories, not necessarily mine. And then that has to be 10 years ago, I would say. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I just thought, wow, because Dan, let me tell you something. You as a person who has drank so much tequila right now that it's obvious, the dialogue that you're looking for in relationships is a give and take. And there's nothing there's nothing lonelier than being with somebody who's like,
yeah,
let me talk about myself all the time. Hey, you know your problem? Let me top it. You know your thing? Let me top
Tom,
it.
Tom, is this going to be a long story? Because I have some stuff. I have some more stuff
more
to
minutes.
Say about me.
Because Dan, okay, here's the thing. Let's go to the tote board. How much have we raised so far? Polio, gone.
Allison, where people find you on the social medias?
There is a Facebook presence, but I don't go anywhere near that. I'm on the Instagram on Allison B. Janney and on the Twitter, Allison B. Janney. But the only thing I really do is the Instagram. I'm a very timid social media presence. I don't really enjoy, I'm a very private person, Dan. I don't relish sharing things with the public.
I'm gonna share a video with Allison that she'll clearly post on her Instagram account of all the fun and joviality we've had here on this episode of What We're Drinking.
I will post that on my Instagram account. I probably won't do Twitter. I don't know how to do it. I don't post.
I'll help you, but it better be a very flattering angle.
Yeah, I better look.
Yes. No, we're gonna make sure that it all looks good. I do want to sincerely thank Tom Caltabiano and Allison Janney for joining me on the show. As always, I want to thank you guys for listening. I know you got a lot of options out there in terms of podcast. In fact, everybody in the world has a fucking podcast right now, except Allison and Tom. It's the only reason they're on here. Once they get their own, I'll never see them again.
Yeah, we're going to start our own tonight.
Follow me at I've had a lot of tequila. WWD_podcast. That's the podcast. And then at The Imbiber, Allison Janney, Tom Caltabiano, El Tesoro Tequila. Thank you for giving us this bounty of juice.
Here's to El Tesoro. Thank you for El
Tesoro.
There
we go. Hey, oh, El Tesoro. Hello.
Thank you for making something so delicious. Like, that's...
And, yeah, see you next week, everybody.